Okay, let me start with a simple part. So I don't need to explain you what superluminality is. Well, that's the topic of the workshop. Now pi is 92. Well, I don't need to continue. Yeah, I think. So let me come to asymptotic fragility. I'll start with the Lagrangian, which kind of the favorite Lagrangian at this meeting, which is, I'm changing the letter because I already used pi for something else, plus c plus dots. So to make my life simpler and to be able to calculate things, I will go to 1 plus 1 dimensions. And at the end, I will, so hopefully, what I say, not, it doesn't look very special, like technical details look special to 1 plus 1 dimensions, but hopefully, I hope that some more general lesson extends to higher dimensions. At the end, I may comment on what is special here about 1 plus 1 dimensions. And but I will stick in 1 plus 1 dimensions for this talk. So to make my life somewhat more interesting, instead of one field, I will consider several fields. So there will be index I, and I runs from 1 to d minus 2. I'll take particular system of this kind, namely, I take the action of this form. Which is Nambu-Gotha or DBI action. And for now, yeah, I focus on C positive. So this is subluminal theory. Later I'll have to talk about C negative. That's our topic. Let's start with a few comments about this theory. I'm not aware conventional to even though the sign is positive, I'm not aware about conventional to DUV completion of this theory. If I expand this field, this action, I will find for single field, I will find two leading order terms will have this form with positive C. Yes. And with multi-field, again, there will be, it's all subluminal. So I'm not aware about kind of completely conventional to DUV completion. On the other hand, at least for D equal 3 and 4, and recently maybe even for 5 and 6, there are more or less conventional UV completions when we can realize this theory is a theory living on the worksheet of something like cosmic string or confining flux tube over a high dimensional gauge theory. But that's too boring for this workshop. So I will talk about something else. Namely, I'll talk about yet another UV completion. So which will be purely 2D, but which will be somewhat non-conventional. And I will just describe it for you right now, because we're in two dimensions, so life is sufficiently simple that I will be able to actually provide you a full answer. Well, but two critical dimensions, that means I already gauge fixed two of the modes. So that would be d minus 2 equals 0. No, there will be, there are no transverse modes in those series.
So if I'm thinking of a target space, two dimensional target space,
yes, or here I have at least three dimensional target space.
At least three.
Because d minus 2 is larger than 2, and d is a dimensionality of target space. Right. Yeah. This so I'm thinking here in geometric terms. I'm thinking about here about kind of infinitely long string, and I fixed the static gauge, so Xi's are transverse excitations.
So your little d, when you say up here, full little d,
little d
is the first point of direction. First line, 2d means two space time dimensions. No.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm always thinking about this as a Wolfschmidt theory. So
little d is a Wolfschmidt dimensionality or what?
Little d is a, yeah. So yeah, it's well, two, when I say 2d, that means from Wolfschmidt point of view. And capital D is target space. And for the purpose of this talk, I don't need target space interpretation at all. So I just think about this as a two-dimensional theory on the Wolfschmidt of infinitely long string.
And when you're saying first line, 2D, lack of 2D UV completion, that means with three axes or two axes over there. Target space is fixed.
No, with any number of axes, but just UV completing it is a two-dimensional theory. I mean, more formally, like getting it as a result of RG flow from some UV, two-dimensional UV CFT.
Isn't there a massive problem? Isn't there some sort of highly supersymmetric string theory which has target space dimension 2?
No, but those wouldn't have this axis, right?
Well, that's why I'm asking what you fix for your axis. That's why I was asking. You said it's arbitrary.
But larger than, so d minus 2, this d minus 2 is larger than 0. But now I'm asking whether there is a UV completion for this theory. Just as a conventional two-dimensional field theory. And I don't know the answer. It would be interesting to find one. By the way, this theory already provides counterexample, even with the wrong sign. So with the right sign, it already provides counterexample to some common law. For instance, many people believe there are no Goldstone bosons in two dimensions. Well, this is a theory of Goldstone bosons in two dimensions. So. Okay, so now let me describe UV completion I will be talking about. So it will be well, Coleman theory really tells you that there is no operator X. That's what it tells. Right, but I don't need to talk about this operator to describe this theory. There will be S matrix and the corresponding scattering amplitudes. They respect certain word identities corresponding to non-linearized symmetries. So in that sense, it's a theory of Goldstone bosons. But there is no operator X. And that's all what.
You could probably say the same for all would be Goldstone bosons in 2D.
Huh?
You could probably say the same words for all would be Goldstone bosons in 2D that are sort of violating Coleman's theorem, but in practice, if you use.
Well, it's also target space is non-compact here, so that's also it's probably also important for this argument. So, but anyway, that's relevant for what I'm going to talk about. So it will be integrable theory and more or less particularly simple integrable theory, integrable reflectionless theory in 1+1 dimensions, which means all interactions which will be going on here that if I take two particles, like collide them, I get there is no particle production, there is no even reflection, so all of what I get is they go through each other, and there is a phase shift, which depends on center of mass energy. That's 2-2-2 scattering S matrix. And if I consider multi-particle processes, well, I just multiply the pairwise phase shifts.
So, does this theory have a mass gap?
No, it's massless theory.
So what do you mean by the S matrix?
Well, that's what I mean. I can still talk about. In practical terms, you can start just calculating Feynman diagrams here. And well, there will be no higher divergences because there are many derivatives here. So there is lots of derivatives sitting on all axes. In more intuitive way, so higher divergences usually come from collinear splitting. So if you have massless particle, you may think one may split into a few. That's allowed by conservation laws. But here, all interactions are irrelevant in the IR. So that means just by Lorentz invariance, if I have a bunch of left movers, I can boost them and make arbitrary soft, and they become free in that limit. And that tells us that there are no such processes here. So, but there is left-right scattering here. But then series like that, yeah, they're not commonly known, but Zamolodchik have studied them for quite a while. So there are well-defined massless series in two dimensions.
What is maybe not very trivial is when you scatter left-right.
That's the same argument. That's equivalent to saying that there is no left-left scattering. So it's not clear what that would mean.
One, probably not zero.
Yeah, sorry, one. Yeah. In more complicated series that arises, and that's confusing. Here it's simple enough that there is no S left-left, so there is only left-right scattering, and that's S matrix I'm talking about. So I'll just write the answer for you. So if you want, that will be my definition of a theory. So this is the answer for these two particle phase shifts. Now, you may ask me, how do I know that this is the UV completion? Well, first of all, at tree level, one can just check. So one can expand these NLS. One can calculate Feynman diagrams here, and one finds they agree. So in the classical limit, this phase shift reproduces that Lagrangian. This phase shift is index independent. So for any, I take any indices here. So I take any two flavors, they go through each other and acquire this phase shift. That's this property, integrable. More than, it's not only elastic, it's reflectionless. So they don't bounce from each other. They just go through each other. So it's a particularly simple kind of scattering. Now, at higher orders, the claim would be that, basically because this S matrix satisfies all the right analyticity property, that if I choose my favorite regularization scheme and start calculating in that regularization scheme, I will be able to add to this Lagrangian order by order in perturbation theory. I would be able to add to this Lagrangian counter terms, which would reproduce this S matrix. Of course, it's not very practical and not very useful thing to do, but in principle, one can try to do that. And by the way, note already at one loop, so we did it in one loop because at one loop it actually leads to something interesting. At one loop, the counter term which you need to add, so if d equals 3 or 26, that at one loop there is no counter term needed. But at d not equals 3 or 26, you need to add a counter term of this form. Which also known under the name Polchinski-Strominger interaction. So the interesting thing about this counter term that even though it's local, it doesn't preserve the non-linearized Lorentz symmetry of this action. And actually, that's example of a rational term we were discussing with Alberto yesterday. So it's if I start calculating in this theory and insist on non-linearized Lorentz symmetry, then if d is not equal 3 or 26, I get in term in the amplitude, which looks local. I can get it from such a counter term. But this counter term is not allowed if I'm insisting on that symmetry. And that's, of course, the origin of the fact that 26 is a special dimension in string theory. Right, because it's manifestly equal to 0 at 26, and at d equal to 3, actually it vanishes on shell because the corresponding amplitude would be proportional to s cube plus t cube plus u cube, and that 0 in 1 plus 1 dimensions. So for somewhat different reasons, but probably the most convincing argument is that this S matrix really provides UV completion for this theory, is that because this theory is so simple that I calculate more in this theory, namely, I can use a tool which is goes under the name TBA, thermodynamic Bethe-Ansatz. You don't need to know what it is. This is a machine which allows you to do the following. You start with S matrix for integrable theory, and from there you reconstruct finite volume spectrum of the theory. And if you apply this machine in this particular case, it actually comes out, it's very nice because usually you get some, you need to be, first of all, somewhat inventive to even apply this, but then you get some rather complicated set of integral equations. But here they all reduce to algebraic equations, and you get the spectrum of this form. So I will need this formula later on. That's fine, right? Now, if you ever open any string theory textbook, you would immediately recognize this formula. This is a spectrum of bosonic string quantized using Lightcon quantization in the sector with binding number one. So, in other words, people were inventive back in the 70s. And manage to quantize this theory by other means and get the same answer for finite volume spectrum. So we know that this S matrix is the correct.
Is that the Y or 4? Y5?
Sorry?
The term, the coefficient in front of yeah, this is Y or.
This is 4, sorry. This is 4. Sorry. And yeah, and tilde here. So here, what I'm doing is just doing KK reduction of this theory on a circle. And n and tilde is just a total unit of left and right moving KK momentum for the state I'm talking about. And this is the answer. So well, that gives me confidence that indeed this S matrix provides correct UV completion of this theory. Well, and again related. So in Lightcon, that's another way to check that d equal to 3. If d not equal to 3 or 26, that this quantization is not compatible with Lorentz invariants. D equal 26 is critical dimension of string theory, but in d equals 3, Lightcon quantization is also Lorentz invariant by trivial reasons. The anomalous commutator is there 0 because just operators are the same. So similarly, how amplitude here vanishes kinematically. Okay. So let's now talk a little bit about properties of the theory. So some more physics about this phase shift. So first of all, well, it's quite unconventional. Yes.
You're saying this is a
decomposition
of the theory UV. I give you the full S matrix.
Yeah, I mean, I have UV.
I don't need to give you a Lagrange.
Yeah, in a sense, you may think about this as a definition of the theory, right? And then if you want to work hard, you can write order by order, reconstruct Lagrange, write local Lagrangian, which will reproduce this S matrix. And actually, what's nice about this theory, so, well, if you expand this function is a series in the perturbative series in lambda, you get absolutely convergent series. So there are no non-perturbative effects here. The series is not asymptotic. So you really can just reconstruct a Lagrangian order by order in perturbation theory, which will exactly give this answer. So this theory is very simple. Well, apart from S equal to infinity. All right. So, and yeah. Well, so this S matrix consistent almost with all properties which you want, apart from, well, usually, well, it has strange asymptotics at the infinity, and that's crucial for many interesting properties of this theory.
But this is a phase shift, so it's automatically unitary. No problem.
Well, it's unitary, but it's yeah. So really, well, the way to think about it, well, it, yeah, because it's a theory of massless particles, right? So if I draw so what I wrote for you, what I mean really is the following: if I look in the Mandelstam plane, there should be a cut which goes all the way from zero to infinity. So the answer is here is e to the is. The answer here is e to minus is.
I see, so you have that.
Yeah. So there is a cut. Yeah. Right. Yeah. 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 This is the answer in there. Upper half plane, right? Mm-hmm. So as I said, it has very unusual behavior in the UV. So it doesn't contradict what I said before, that there is no conventional, at least I don't know, conventional UV completion of this theory. And one reason to see it, well, usually by conventional UV completion, we mean that the theory is conformal invariant in the UV. But which means that left-right phase shift should go to constant just because it has no parameter to depend on. Or in more fancy language, well, there is Hilamorphic factorization in two-dimensional quantum field theory. So left movers and right movers don't talk to each other. Here they keep talking to each other. So there is a memory about this dimensionful parameter built in the theory, which goes all the way to arbitrary high energy. So there is no UV CFT, which corresponds to this S matrix, which is related to this essential singularity. On the other hand, usually having singularity in non-nullicity at the infinity associate people say it with some level of non-locality. And I will argue that this theory is non-local to some extent. But on the other hand, on the physical sheet, it is polynomially bounded, the amplitude. It goes with, actually, well, it's exponentially small. So in that sense, it's kind of, it's borderline violating locality. Just to give you some other physical properties that you have some, and which will be important for me later. So if you have a phase shift, well, I don't have that much in this series. There's no particle production. All I get is a phase shift. Well, what a phase shift does, it produces time delays for me. So if I start with two wave packets, I collide them, I get a time delay, which is a derivative of phase shift with respect to momentum. So here, if I calculate the time delay, this is the answer. So it grows with energy. So again, that's rather unusual for field theory. In field theory, usually when we have hard particles, well, and collide them, they basically go through each other. Not much happens here. The larger the energy is, the larger phase shift. And well, just in parentheses, I think it's interesting to compare this to what happens in gravity in 3+1 dimensions, where of course there is much more stuff happens there. But in particular, when you take high energy collision, you get a phase shift which goes like e cubed L Planck to the 4, which is Hawking, because you produce a black hole and Hawking evaporates. So that doesn't important for what I'm going to talk about.
So this the fact that there's no use of VCFT, that mean what is the RG flow like in the human fixed?
Yeah, well, yeah, we don't know how to call it. That's the answer. So it's not asymptotically free theory, not even like what people call asymptotically safe, meaning there is non-trivial UV fixed point. So we call it asymptotically fragile for the reasons I'm going to explain. But yeah, that's excellent question. How to describe this behavior in terms of UV RG flow, and is there a description in terms of RG flow?
Sorry, that's a very nice question.
Yes.
This S matrix a priori is not a gauge independent quantity, right? If I would use different gauges to quantize this model, I would get different results.
Well, it depends of what you mean gauges. You probably what you mean if you look at the theory in light cone gauge,
yeah.
Then it looks like you are.
For example, you said that this theory, yeah. Is this theory the same as light cone gauge quantization?
Well, I just reproduced for you the
spectrum is the same.
Huh?
Okay, let's say the theories are the same, but that one we typically think is free.
But yeah, but that's the spectrum is not the spectrum of light cone Hamiltonian, right? That free theory, but the operator whose spectrum you're asking about is different, is complicated operator in light cone gauge. Exactly. So in other words,
but there is a free theory description, and then you measure some complicated operator.
So yeah, so you may.
I think that this is a free theory in disguise, and then I would say that they are deployed trivial, the theory is free.
Well, I don't know. But on the other hand, well, we used to think that if you take a Lagrangian and start calculating amplitudes, that amplitude is something invariantly meaningful. And if I said if you start taking this Lagrangian and calculate amplitude, you'll get non-zero answer. So I don't think it's too useful to think about this as a free theory. So the way I think you can map the question about spectrum of this theory into a question, the answerable like question about free theory, but still it's a question about very complicated operator in free theory. So I wouldn't call this theory free. It's not according to the usual definition, which you calculate this matrix, you get something which is another way to say it, yeah, you can do some change of coordinates in this theory, which affects asymptotics at the infinity in a field dependent way. And that's how kind of this S matrix arises. So
for example, this very simple S matrix, if I would write it in terms of the momentum of the scattered particle, this is like e to the k1 times k2, right?
Yes, yes.
When I write, say, quantization condition for particles, I have exponential k1 times length equal product of such S matrices, right? So I can say that this S matrix, the net effect is changing the effective length of my chain if I put that matrix together with the length. So sometimes I can bring part of this matrix to the left or to the right hand side and reinterpret what I
yeah,
collected.
Perfect.
Be related to this.
Perfect. So that's the next thing I was going to show. There is a very simple physical intuition where this S matrix coming from. Namely, let me take just classical Nambu-Goethe action, and let me take a Nambu-Goethe, let me say kink on a string, which is purely left moving, and propagating this way. And now let me, in this classical background, let me take, which this is a solution of my classical field equations. Take now a probe right moving wave packet and calculate its geodesic. And I will find that there will be a time delay coming simply from the fact that kind of physical length of a string is longer, because for a string, its physical length is the same as its energy. And that's where this time delay is coming from. So yeah, by making change of coordinates, so in some sense, if you think about observer on the wall sheet, so there are two kinds of observers you may think about. You may think about geodesic observers moving on the wall sheet. Those will see free S matrix. Or you can measure time using kind of target space clocks, and those will see this S matrix. So well, I don't know. Well, we can discuss it later. But for me, I know this theory doesn't look free. I take Lagrangian, I start calculating, I get S matrix. It's non-zero. Well, there are many pure phase shift theories in two dimensions. So there are all integrable theories are like that. So well, usually we don't call them free. Although maybe there is a way to think about this, some kind of non-trivial statistics. So maybe, huh? Sorry?
Sorry? Free, you're saying that.
Sorry?
D equals 26.
Yes. Why? No, it's not free. No, it's the same, yeah.
I'm not saying the S matrix is one. I'm saying.
Well, you know that interacting theories can have a free field representation.
Yeah, it's so not. In what sense it has to be free?
Think about all the minimal models, you can give a 5-inverse.
Right. Again, you can use free serial language to solve this series.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm saying.
But it's not free. It's.
Yeah. I mean, you know that even in N equals 4, it's a free field representation with the Nicolai mapping.
In other words, we usually think about string theory. Oh, yeah, indeed, we fix conformal gauge, and then we have free bosons. But there is a Virasoro constraint which left over, right? So, and from solving this Virasoro constraint, one can actually do this exercise. You reconstruct exactly the same S matrix. So, constraint free theory is not free theory. So,
yeah, I mean,
Massimo, can you elaborate on your claims for the uninitiated?
No, in the sense that you have many models that in which you can represent the, say, minimal models, where you can represent the operators of your theory, and even non-minimal models, even quantum models, in terms of free fields. But you have composite operators made of free fields, and maybe also some extra operator that you have to insert in your correlator, this called the screening charge, and then with those objects you can reproduce all the correlators of theories that are not free at all, right? Minimal models.
So is this different from saying that, for instance, when we do perturbation theory, we're actually computing free field correlators of the time and nothing else?
Well, I think it's different because there you don't have to do a perturbative expansion. I mean, you have only nulls, the correlators, right? I mean, you can compute exact formulas just using composites. But there are other models. I mean, a theory in IDS3, for instance, can be represented in terms of free fields. I mean, the conformal field theory in IDS3 has a representation in terms of bosons and fermions. The theory is not free. I mean, in the sense that the interesting operators are composites and they have non-trivial.
But for instance, let me continue with some list of physical properties of this theory. So for instance, it has very interesting equation of state. So if I try to heat this theory up, I find interesting, I know exact equation of state, which I can, because it's the same as ground state energy. Exact free energy. So I find that there is a physically maximal temperature in this theory, which is, of course, what string theories know under Hagedorn temperature. And that means that as you approach this temperature, heat capacity diverges and integral over heat capacity over temperature diverges. So you really, with putting finite amount of energy in the system, you cannot heat it up above this temperature.
You need some external operator to heat it up, because if it's an integrable model.
Well, but it's always, yeah, when we talk about thermodynamics, yeah, we're always imagining something like that, right?
I mean, an integrable model just sloshes around.
But that's always the case if you want to discuss thermodynamics of the integrable model. And related to that, it can be put in a volume smaller than inverse temperature. Ground state energy becomes imaginary then, which corresponds to appearance of string theory tachyon. These are all these properties. They hint that this theory, to some extent, non-local. And there is a mean. And I think most direct way to see it, because we know the answer for S matrix. So what we can do, we can just see what happens if we start with two wave packets. So we can arrange two wave packets with some widths. So we scatter them. As a result of the scattering, you get again entangled state. Now I start with initial packets which are not entangled, which makes sense like experimentally if you think about arranging scattering experiments. This kind of experimentalist here, experimentalist there. He arranges particles and they collide them. Then as a result I get entangled state. And for this entangled state, one gets what sometimes people call string uncertainty principle. What's nice here is that you can really just get it by doing actual calculation with this S matrix. So you get that for outgoing wave packets, the product of their widths is always larger than LS squared. Or for instance, if the initial widths were the same, then you get delta X outgoing is equal to delta X initial plus LS to the 4 over delta X initial. So that tells you that this theory is non-local in a very practical sense. You're trying to arrange high energy experiments, scattering experiment, creating narrow wave packets to probe short distances, but the result of interactions always broaden the outgoing particles. That you can't resolve physics at distance smaller than something.
Is delta X in Hagedorn space or in the worksheet?
No, everything in worksheet. I'm thinking about this two-dimensional theory. Yes. I'm trying to interpret as a two-dimensional theory using that time and space coordinate. Well, and more formal argument, which is not a proof, but another evidence that the theory is non-local, that in integrable models, people developed powerful tools which allow to go, if you have S matrix, allow to go back to correlation functions, first to form factors, which are kind of matrix element of operators between states, and then in principle by summing those form factors to correlation functions. And the ideology is basically apply LSD formulas backwards. One gets some set of recurrent relations, and it's hard, but there are examples where people do it explicitly. So what happens there, if you try to apply this technique, that the assumption in this recurrent relation, the assumption which enters there, that actually amplitudes should be polynomially bounded in the infinity, not just on the physical sheet, but really as goes infinity. And because of this exponential behavior, it looks like there is no way, useful way to apply these recurrent formulas. So that's indication that this theory, in spite of having well-defined on-shell observables, doesn't allow to reconstruct off-shell correlators. As far as calculating off-shell correlators is concerned, this theory looks like as any effective, non-renormalizable effective theory. So you can do calculations, you will get counter terms. This theory doesn't seem to fix those. And that's why we call it asymptotically fragile, because that makes it very hard to look for theories of this kind. Usually when you find one UV complete theory, you can perturb it by local operator, at least and do perturbation theory. But here, the moment you perturb it, you lose the UV behavior of the amplitude. So there is no, I don't know about regular way how to do perturbation theory about this flow.
Sorry, can you say again how you see that if you perturb it, you lose everything?
Well, just because even I can't define off-shell correlators, because that's what we do in perturbation theory, right? We perturb by correlator, and then perturbatively we start calculating, start calculating endpoint functions and of these off-shell operators and local operators and integrate over.
So what happens if we try to do it perturbative? We have to try to add some dx.
Yeah, there will be, because there is the non-normalizable series. There will be divergences. Operator will start mixing with each other, and there is apparently no guiding principle how to fix those divergences.
But usually we think about these perturbations being perturbations at the, let's say, UV fixed point.
Yeah, here there is no UV fixed point, so that's
exactly. But so in a sense, it's not really asymptotically fragile, no, because
is that what?
Well, you're saying that it's fragile because you cannot, if you perturb it, you screw up everything. But you're trying to perturb somehow.
Yeah, I'm just, all that I'm saying, I need to call this somehow. I don't know how to perturb it, and
but it's still local perturbatively. It's just you need to add time.
Well, it's not local in this sense. And also in the sense that, well, as far as we can tell, it doesn't predict local correlators.
But
every effective field theory is like that. So, but as a like the sharp defined quantities, it doesn't. And that makes lots of sense in if you think about it from the point of view of string theory, because defining these correlators, I think that would mean that you would be able to define some of shell observables in string theory, which. Believe not to be possible. Okay, so to have a summary here, so well, it's what we call asymptotically fragile theory. It's non-normalizable at phase value theory, which somehow still allows to calculate amplitudes at all energies. That's why we call it UV complete, but not off-shell correlators. And the reason I find it interesting, because that's kind of behavior we expect from gravity, right? Because we keep saying in gravity, you don't expect to have well-defined local off-shell observables, only on-shell ones. So this theory illustrates how it happens in a very, how this may happen in a very concrete sense. It just doesn't predict those things. Okay, so now let me change sign, because I have to comply with the topic of the workshop. And it's simple, right? Because as I said, the perturbation series for this theory, it's convergent in LS squared. So I can take the same theory and just change LS squared in all formulas. And for instance, perturbatively, with the same choice of regularization scheme and counter terms, which would reproduce from this Nambu-Goto Lagrangian e to the IS theory. Now I have another theory. I have wrong sign dBi. So it's ls minus 2 d to sigma square root of minus determinant at alpha beta plus alpha xi. Which geometrically would describe string propagating in the target space with one space coordinate and d minus one time coordinates. And don't ask me what that means. But I don't need to think about it. I'm thinking about this one plus one dimensional theory. So this theory, well, in the same sense, it's UV completed by S matrix e to minus is ls squared over 4. So at the level of analytic properties of the S matrix, well, it's somewhat worse, right? Because now already on the physical sheet, the amplitude exponentially grows. So I lost the polynomial boundness on the physical sheet. But I think so that looks like a good playground to. Because I think it's a step forward to what we usually have when we write this theory and say, okay, at c larger than zero, we have UV completion. At c negative, there is this dispersion argument which tells that the theory cannot be UV completed. Of course, dispersion argument also correct in this case. What I violated, I cannot close the contour in my dispersion relation at infinity. The amplitude exponentially grows there. But on the other hand, well, in some sense, I have explicit UV completion. I have the answer for amplitudes. So one can now try and play with this theory and to see, well, for instance, this theory, to what extent it worse than this one. So giving up yet another property at the infinity. So how much really I lost?
Sorry, can I ask you something about the dispersive argument? So OK, you can close the contour at infinity, but you can still check the optical theorem. Don't you violate the optical theorem?
No, the imaginary part, because it's imaginary part of you need to always you need to subtract one, so it imaginary part is still fine.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It cannot be. I mean, okay. If S is real, you have a
yes.
It's elastic scatter.
Right.
I mean, it's a phase. I mean, forget about the optical theorem. Yes. E to the I real number.
No, but if I do have, so do I have a non-trivial cross section?
No, because that's. Yeah, this thing is unitary, right? So that guarantees that.
No, but you were talking about the famous cut. No?
Yes.
The cut tells you that the discontinuity across the cut of the imaginary part.
But these are the ALs. If you were in higher dimensions, this would be the analog. These are the phase shifts. You also have analysis in the phase shifts. But this is obviously unitary because it's just a phase shift. It's trivial.
I mean, the norm is one. That's unitary.
The mod is one.
You'll need to make it more complicated than it is.
You're comparing it with a different beast, which is.
Sorry, you're saying that.
So, in other words, imaginary part, because if I expand this, there is. So, this one, then the three level answer. Here, there is no imaginary parts, but the imaginary part appears in the.
Sorry,
it's
not the amplitude.
It's not the.
Right,
not
yeah. It's not the amplitude. That's a full S matrix, right?
The AL.
Yeah, so here I get like minus a squared term, and that's actually in the. That's what the imaginary part is, but that doesn't change sign. So,
okay.
So let's now discuss some. So we can play now with this theory and discuss physics of this theory to see whether it's more pathological than the one we started with. Well, there are some physical properties here. So now I get, if I do scattering, I get instead of time delay, I'm getting time advance. Which is 1/2 e ls squared. Similarly, I can reproduce this time advance by doing classical calculation. Note in this classical calculation for time delay, well, there was something interesting actually. If this kink is large enough, then when I'm doing this classical calculation, there will be a region where, kind of in space-time picture, both left mover and right mover they move left, kind of this perturbation. The light cone is bended, and this right moving perturbation get carried away by this left moving bump. So in these coordinates, it looks a little bit like horizon. Of course, it's coordinate dependent statement, but well, similarly, when I'm doing the calculation here, then in this time slices with this choice of coordinates, for a large enough bump, I will have a region where my kind of right mover will move back in time, which caused lots of confusion in discussing superluminal theories. Well, and it's of course just okay. That means that to talk about that classical configuration, I need to choose different coordinates, different choice of Cauchy slices. But from the point of view of S matrix, well, that's not a problem here. And I should know, by the way, so in this theory, it's easy also to write classical solutions which will get some singularities. So it's not that trivial that, okay, that, well, it's not that all physics of this theory is in classical theory. So for this S matrix does resolve some actual singularity which you can obtain on the bullshit.
So you're still doing it via quadrant 26?
No, I'm doing arbitrary D. Right. But just if you want to keep space-time interpretation, then you need to be in D equal 26.
From an anomaly thing, does it still carry through?
No, it's not. In this language, it's what I said before. It's not a conformal anomaly, but if D is not equal to 26 or 3, that S matrix is incompatible with nonlinearized Lorentz symmetry of this series. So to reproduce it, I will have to add counter terms which violate nonlinearized Lorentz symmetry. But for the point of, so yeah, indeed, this geometric, that's another reason why this classical argument somewhat subleading, somewhat misleading, right? Because if you think about classically, you don't see, in this way, you don't see why D equal 26 is special, even though you always reproduce the same phase shift. But still, you can do this classical calculation and reproduce the phase shift, but really, the quantum level is much more subtle. So yeah, this theory loses nonlinearized symmetry when you're away from critical dimension. Okay, then you can do thermodynamics actually. Yeah, so you can repeat TBA exercise, which was most convincing evidence in my first case that this is the right quantization of a theory. And you find there you find something disturbing at first sight. So as far as ground state energy goes, actually there is no tachyon at any value of R. And in correspondingly, thermodynamics of the theory, in some sense, more conventional. So there is no maximal temperature. You can heat it up at arbitrary high temperature. However, if you look now at the excited states, well, just from this formula. So again, you don't need to work hard. It was actually a very simple paper to write. You take previous paper and change in all formulas, change LS squared to minus LS squared. So you change LS squared to minus LS squared here, and you find that there will be, at any R now, there will be infinite number of states which large enough excitation numbers with imaginary energies. Any R, infinite number of the string theory we usually call tachyons, but if you're trying to do target space interpretation for this theory. So I may think, so that's why this theory is pathological. But then you realize, well, okay, but there is a clear physical reason for that. Because what I'm trying to do, applying TBA technique, I'm trying to identify points at the coordinate separation 0 and R. Now, if I have excited state, if I have a large enough excitation, because say I created left mover excitation here, because there is time delay, time advance rather than time delay. So by doing this identification, I am producing something. I'm trying to identify points which, for this background, they're not causally disconnected. So by this identification, I'm trying to create a closed time-like curve in the system. So the fact that theory produces pathological answer to me, well, when I say, okay, this theory, well, it's a legal operation to do on this theory, and it's clearly clear why this is a legal operation to do in this theory. And actually, yeah, so one can look at the picture and tilde. So there is a curve like that, where kind of this is the excluded state. So it touches the n equals zero axis exactly at the points which in a semi-classical limit when you neglect this d minus two term exactly correspond to this intuition when the correspondent state would have time advance equal to the length of a string. It's interesting that there are these states here which are apparently allowed. So when you have a bunch of left movers and a bunch of right movers, so naively you would think that there is a room for a closed time-like curve there, but somehow still the states look fine. But I don't know even how to interpret. I think the simplest interpretation of this thing is you have to live with it if you want to have a superluminal theory, and you want to compactify it, you need to be somewhat more inventive than just identify coordinate.
So from the point of view of the target space, you are identifying time-like direction.
Well, I don't know what it means, because target space has d minus one times here, so I have bad intuition about thinking of physics in such space times. But well, actually, that's as far as we get. So I don't have a clear conclusion here. It's rather so that's when BS part of my talk starts. It won't be long.
This energy. This target space energy in this space is the generator of translations in the space level direction. No, because of this point that you have many times in one space.
No, but it's no. That what I call energy here is still is a generator translation in time-like direction from the point of view target space. Otherwise, it would be just equivalent to replacing what I call space and time, and I would be back.
And it's any of the time direction.
Well, it's kind of the projection on the. Because I choose because I chose the gauge. It's any because I chose this gauge, right? I chose. From the point of view of diff invariant string description, I chose static gauge. So it's a projection on particular time direction. Yeah.
But in target space, I mean, if I think in terms of multiple times, I do have presumably vectors in the spectrum, right? And then vectoring multiple times is kind of closed.
Well, now you're talking about kind of short string spectrum, right? So right. That's separate. That's not something in 2D series. These are not there. So that's not something which I have in this theory. So I'm really thinking about this is. Yeah, but I do hold because physically, when I, for instance, put in a finite volume, and my previous normal example, it corresponds really to working always in the spectrum with the sector with binding number one. So I always talk about string which. I'm not trying to talk about short strings in this theory, and I'm not trying to give it. Yeah, because I'm here at GS equal to zero, right? So in that sense, it's free string theory. So I mean, and I'm world sheet of infinitely long free string in the sense GS equal to zero. So I'm not producing. There is still some non-trivial scattering on this world sheet, but I'm not producing short strings from there. Target space point of view. So that's a separate sector. And from 2D point of view, there is no at least immediate obvious interpretation. Okay, then we can skip the S part and you'll never know collection to pi. But, okay, you can ask me afterwards. Yeah.